But first up, I guess all the trouble started with Megan Abbott. Megan has made a name for herself as a writer of women-centered crime fiction. She is also a staff writer for the HBO series The Deuce. She joined us to talk about writing for the gritty crime drama and her novel, Give Me Your Head.
I guess I always knew in some subterranean way Diane and I would end up back together. We are bound ankle to ankle, a monstrous three-legged race, accidental accomplices, wary conspirators, or Siamese twins fused in some hidden place. It's that powerful, this thing we share. A murky history, its narrative near impenetrable. We keep telling it to ourselves, noting its twists and turns, trying to make sense of it, and hiding it from everyone else. Sometimes it feels like Diane was a quarter of myself broken off and left to roam my body, floating through my blood. On occasional nights, stumbling to the bathroom after a bad dream, a Diane dream, I avoid the mirror, averting my eyes, leaving the light off, some primitive part of my half-asleep brain, certain that if I looked, she might be there. Cover your mirrors after dark, my great-grandma used to say, or they trap the dreamer's wandering soul. So even though I haven't seen her in a dozen years, it isn't truly a surprise when Diane appears at the Severin Lab, my workplace, the building in which I spend most of my waking life. Of all the labs in all the world, she had to walk into mine, and everything begins again. The strangest part is how little we actually know about each other, not our birthdays, our favorite songs, who made our hearts beat faster or didn't. We were friends, if Diane is friends with anyone, only for a few months and long ago. But we do know the one thing no one else in the world knows about the other. The only important thing.
That was excellent. Thank you. And I love that Casablanca reference. That's funny, off all the labs in the world. Yeah. The title of your novel, Give Me Your Hand, made me think of that opening scene in Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo, in which Jimmy Stewart's character, Scotty Ferguson, is hanging off the edge of a roof, and the police officer reaches out and says, "Give me your hand," not once, but twice. So I'm wondering, is the title by any chance a reference to Vertigo?
Oh, that's amazing, because actually it's not, but that movie was hovering through my head through much of the writing of this book. So maybe unconsciously. Consciously, it comes from Macbeth. Lady Macbeth says it during one of her soliloquies.
Yeah. So, and Vertigo, is it possible to say about how Vertigo influenced influenced your novel without giving anything away?
Yeah, I think it's something about the sort of dreamlike structure of that movie, that it's sort of about obsession and about the past haunting one. And, you know, it's sort of a crazy movie, really, if you look at it. It's about, Jimmy Stewart's pretty dangerous person, but he's the hero. I think also that kind of aesthetic, that it's okay to have kind of damaged heroes at the center of the book and, all of that.
Yeah, because he really goes off the rails near the end of the film.
Right,
and he's kind of really unhinged and almost like sociopathic, almost psychopathic in places. Yeah, so can you give us a brief synopsis of Give Me Your Hand without, of course, revealing any major spoilers?
It's about Kit, who is a sort of ambitious young scientist, and she's about to go into competition for a slot on this big study she wants to be a part of, and just coming into frame is Diane, a girl she knew in high school, who actually originally fired up her ambition, but who also shared with her a very dark secret that's haunted Kit ever since. And so now they're sort of competitors or rivals in this lab, and the past, as it does, comes back to haunt them.
Yeah, yeah, and this big study is about PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Why were you interested in writing about that?
I wanted it to be some women's health issue because I was interested in women in the sciences are still so underrepresented, and women's health issues are still under-researched and underfunded. So I wanted it to be something in that area. Then I came upon PMDD and was sort of amazed at how many women suffered from it. You know, I guess up to 8%, maybe more, but how little I had never heard of it.
Me neither.
That's a large number of women, and that they were sort of suffering in silence was very compelling to me and made me want to look closer.
Yeah, and also it's been used as a criminal defense, right? So I guess that was something that appealed to you as well?
Yes, I mean, it's sort of a not successfully, I'll add, but it is interesting because I think that in some ways PMDD is sort of stigmatized in part because it's a women's health issue and it's private and personal, but also because it feeds into various stereotypes of women being sort of out of control and their emotions overtake them, and I think that's how it ended up becoming this criminal defense. But all of that was interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the great things about your book is the way you portray women's friendships. This idea of frenemies is such a huge part of the relationship between Kit and Diane. How were you able to write about this so well?
I think women have so many, I suspect men do too, but maybe women more common. Women, I suppose, are trained, socialized not to show their competitive instincts as openly. So I think there are often these relationships among women that are part friendship, part competitive relationships, part, you know, somehow you feel sort of neck and neck with each other. And we don't talk about it that much, but it kind of drives us. And so I kind of wanted to get into it and sort of look at it from the inside out.
Mm. Yeah, and you've never worked in a lab, have you? Because you write so well about it, I kind of wonder, hey, has Megan worked in a lab? But you haven't,
no,
I don't think, have you?
No, not at all. And I really started at square one with the research. I've worked in environments where I'm the only woman before, but never a lab. And I talked to a number of female scientists, and to such a degree, I knew so little that I actually had to ask them what they did all day. And it was very embarrassing. Because of course they do a lot, but I really love research, and so all of that, the world of the lab, the competition, this sort of being in that cloistered hothouse space together just really compelled me.
Mm. There's this incredibly strong narrative propulsion to Give Me Your Hand. The pacing is like incredible. It literally is a page turner because I found myself, you know, reading as fast as possible because I wanted to find out what was going to happen next as soon as possible. And the twists in turns in your plot, they kind of reminded me of Ira Levin's novel, A Kiss Before Dying. Is that a book you're familiar with?
I have not read that in years, but I was reading Ira Levin. This is amazing. Well, I was reading Rosemary's Baby, actually. Which is the same kind of breakneck pacing, and the movie's very faithful adaptation. So he is, I think, a master in that. Not talked about as much these days, but I think he understood something about what keeps the heart going, how much information you need and how much you don't need, and how to sort of nudge the reader along into their own unconscious spaces.
Yeah, which are things that you do so well too. Yeah. You're also working as a staff writer on David Simon and George Pelicanos's HBO series, The Deuce. And this series is set in and around Times Square during the early 1970s. And the show chronicles the legalization of pornography and the rise of the pornography industrial complex. Working on the show must be quite a different experience from the solitary work of a novelist. Can you talk a bit about the differences?
Yes, it's really quite opposite. It was a big adjustment for me. You know, I mostly just sit by myself all day at my computer, and I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
In this case, you know, walking into that writer's room, this sort of conference room with David Simon, George Pelicanos, Richard Price, these big guns, and heroes to me, really, and sort of talking and plotting and arguing all day long was, I would get a headache by the end of the day. It was exhilarating, but very, very different, and it forced me out of my shell. I had intended to hang back at first and just observe, and they did not let me do that.
Yeah. You're one of three women writers working on The Deuce, right? Is that right?
Yes, we've had Lisa Lutz, who's another crime novelist, and we also have one, you know, we have a few up-and-coming writers who've been just sort of wonderful. It is in large part about the women working in pornography, so it was really important to David and George that female voices be represented in the room.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, David Simon reached out directly to you, right? Is that right?
Yes, I knew him a little bit through his wife, Laura Lippman, who's a very famous crime novelist in her own right, and I knew George a little bit from the crime fiction community, which is very tight, but it was a big leap for me and a big leap of faith for him that I could pull it off, and, you know, it's been an exciting transition, but definitely one that sort of made me call on all kinds of resources inside.
Yeah. What do you think that you in particular are contributing to the voice and tone of the show, of The Deuce?
I think one of the things that both Lisa and I, who were the first women brought in, our mission was that the women be a range of reflect a range of experiences, that not all women feel degraded by pornography, and not all women see it as something they should be ashamed of, and some will, and some will have positive and negative experiences. We wanted to have, you know, them have multiplicity of responses to working in that world, and we also wanted them not just to be victims, but some of them are, you know, behave badly themselves, mm-hmm. and make poor choices, and we wanted all of that.
Yeah, they're not just passive, they're active.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You wrote the penultimate episode of the first season, and this is really where The Deuce's co-creator, George Pelicanos, made his name with The Wire. He was the guy who wrote the penultimate episode of each season. The episode of The Deuce that you wrote is called Au Reservoir. Can you give us a brief outline of what happens in this episode?
Yeah, it's really, and this to avoid spoilers, but it's a big transition episode. It is the George episode, and he's never let me forget that he let me do it. I don't think it's ever going to happen again. But
was that extra, just to get on that for a second, was that extra pressure, that the fact that it was, that
yes.
you were writing the episode he would normally write?
Yeah. Yes, it was enormously so. And I worried over it for endlessly while writing it. But it was a really, exciting one, and I had pitched a lot of ideas for it. It's a moment of transition where one of the characters that we've grown to really care about, it gets out of the world, and that was really important.
You going back to CC? Where to then? I mean, now that Frankie Martino isn't going to build you a little white farmhouse on the banks of the Hudson River. What's the plan?
I'm not going back to West Virginia. I got a sister who lives up near Buffalo, Lackawanna.
You ever visit her before?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
Lackawanna.
And so all of that felt very monumental and important, and I wanted to get it right. I knew I would be in safe hands with David Simon overseeing it, and ultimately, making sure it was in tip-top shape. But it was nerve-wracking. I had to kind of pretend that it wasn't really ever going to make it to air.
Take some of the pressure off. But yeah. Is there anything that you can tell us about season two of The Deuce?
Yeah, it's well underway, actually, and we move forward to 1977-78, so it's sort of the golden moment of porno chic, and we're really going to see the heyday of all that, and so that's very exciting, but most of the characters will be back, and this is really the kind of splendor of porn when it really felt. This is like right at that sort of pivotal moment before video comes
and
tromps down on everything.
Yeah. So. All right. We'll look forward to that. So have you learned anything from writing for television that you're now applying to writing your fiction?
you know, that's always a slippery slope. Richard Price was giving me advice about that, having gone back and forth between the two. You know, there are really very different notions of storytelling beyond the collaborative. There's something very intimate about novels, and you really can get in the reader's head in a way that TV would never have. On the other hand, I can't say I haven't brought some of the pacing elements back into novels. I'm much more aware early on of when things are moving too slowly because you have no time for that on TV.
Yeah.
You have such a limited amount of space.
Give Me Your Hand must have been an option for film by now, right?
It's an option for TV, AMC, which is, as a madman and Breaking Bad lover, I'm thrilled that it's in AMC's hands now.
Megan Abbott is the author of Give Me Your Hand and a writer for the HBO series The Deuce. You can find out more about Megan at WPR.org/beta. And let us know your comments, questions, and even your favorite Megan Abbott novel by sending a note to beta@WPR.org.